guys. While you guys are going down, I was going to ask you guys, I'm glad this young man brought this up here. Is Macy okay? Some of you young people want to know she's okay? Macy Huffstetler had a wreck last night. She turned her car over, didn't she? So you guys remember her in your prayer. Some of you guys are asking about these shirts. These are the Ford shirts. I think they're going to try to make them available, but you'll have to ask somebody else because, I mean, I wanted them to be orange. And so I obviously don't have a lot of authority when it comes to picking out clothing. But anyway, I think they're going to try to make those available. Hey, guys, we're in week 5 of happiness, the habits of happiness. And this week we want to talk about happiness can be learned. If you've missed some of these, they're free. You want to pick up those CDs out there, they're free. Just grab you some of those. And sometime this week I was talking to some folks, and lots of folks think that happiness is a matter of luck, that if you're happy, you're just lucky. And you know, you get lucky and you have these happy circumstances, and it's nothing could be further from the truth. But I want to tell you that happiness can be learned. It's a quality or several qualities that you can learn. And there are certain qualities that if you learn them, your happiness is going to go up exponentially. But if you don't learn them, it's going to go down exponentially. And, I mean, you think about certain qualities, and you match them up against each other, like patience or impatience, you know, which is happy and which is unhappy, or cruel, unhappy, or kind, you know, and you know, just thinking about folks, if you're arrogant, you tend to be unhappy. If you're humble, you tend to be happy. But today we're going to look at 4 very, very important qualities that you'll need, both of us, you and I, will need to build into our lives. And so I want to ask you something before we get started. Do you want to be happy? So nobody said, I want to be unhappy. So we're going to be in, like I said, we've been in Philippians for about, this is our 5th week. And we're going to be in it again. If you got your Bibles with you, just open up to chapter 2. And if you don't, go back this week to 19 and through 19 and 30. That's where I'm going to be coming out of it. But I want to tell you, at first glance, this passage may not seem like a big deal. Just a couple of guys that Paul and the church knows. But I want to tell you, everything in the Bible is to teach us. It's to teach us. And so in this passage, there are going to be 4 things we're going to talk about to build into our lives if we want to live consistently happy. Consistently happy. And I want to look quickly, real quick. I wrote in your outlines here how Paul endorses these 2 guys as role models. Verse 20 says this. He talked about Timothy here. He says, I have no one else like him. Now I want you to think about this. Paul wrote half the New Testament. He was a great man of God. A lot of people consider him right there, you know, Jesus and Paul. And so for Paul to say, there's no one like him, there's no one else like him, we better pay attention to this guy, Timothy. And so that's what the people did. And then verse 29, he endorses Epaphroditus. Welcome him, honor men like him. The reason why he did, because Epaphroditus nearly died for Paul's sake and for the sake of the gospel, for the good news of Jesus Christ. And he says, and we're going to get into more about that, but Paul says, I'm going to send these guys for 3 different reasons. And I put them in there in 19:28-28. So that I may be cheered, so that you may be glad, and so that I may have less anxiety. As your pastor, somebody that loves most of you, I want you to be happy. I want to be happy. And thirdly, just like Paul, I want you and I both to have less anxiety. Nobody woke up this morning and said, I want more anxiety today. You know, and so What is it about these guys? Real quick, four qualities to be happy. Number one, the first quality is you're filling in your blanks is this. We got to learn to shift the focus away from myself. Learn to shift the focus away from myself. This is a starting point for all happiness. You know, I got to care for more than just me. You know, I got to care for the needs of the folks around me. You know, if I'm only going to think about me, I'm actually going to be a pretty miserable person if I'm only thinking about me. So let's look at Paul's talking about Timothy in verse 20, 21. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare, for everyone else looks out for his own interest. Would you say that today that most folks look out for their own interest, really? I mean, today they do. I mean, you know, not many people are looking out for other people's interests. I got to tell you, I mean, if I were honest, and I need to be honest up here, the first person I think of in the morning normally is not y'all. The first person I think of normally is me. You know, why's my knee hurt like that? What can I do for my knee? You know, just stuff like that. But we think about ourselves normally when we first wake up in the morning. But Paul says, this guy takes genuine interest in you. He thinks about you. He says, there's no one else. Guys, unselfish people are very rare. Lots of people will fake interest in you. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Well, Lee talked about when we were 30. Well, now we're, you know, two services, and I don't know how many we average. It's a bunch of people. So now I get invited to these parties and these diplomatic events for whatever reason. And I used to just hate when something happened when I was there, but now I think it's kind of funny. When you go to these diplomatic things, people will be talking to you, and they're looking behind you. Y'all know what I'm talking about? They're talking to you, but they're looking behind you. And you know what they're looking for? To see who's more important than you that they need to talk to. I'm always tempted to go, who's more important than me? And now it's just funny. I just get a hoot out of them. They're just talking. They don't have a clue what I'm saying. They're doing like this right here. They're working the room. And but it's just funny now. It don't really make me mad anymore other than they pretend to take interest in me. And they really don't. Y'all know what I mean? That I love the English version of this. He genuinely cares for you. Others only care about themselves. He says everyone else looks out for their own interest. And when I think about those folks at these events that I go to, and I think if they were to really want to please me, it's just a matter of focus. They put their eyes on me instead of the person behind me. And so really, if we want, the very first thing we need to be happy is to shift our focus from off ourselves to our neighbors or our spouse or our kids or someone besides yourself. We shift our focus from ourselves. So shift your focus. And what I mean by that is, you know what I'm talking about. When you walk into this room or any room, you don't look around and say, well, some of you might. And say, I wonder who in here that I could help. No, one of the first things we do is, I wonder how I look. I wonder if everything's all right. I ain't got one hanging, you know. Something like that. Y'all know what I'm talking about? I see a lot of y'all coming here, first thing you do, yeah, I'm all right, how you doing? You know, but we always wonder how we look. You know, but so I'm saying shift the focus off yourself. The Phillips version is this. They are all wrapped up in their own affairs. All wrapped up in their own affairs. Single folks, look at me right here. Single folks, it's better to sit home without a date than to go out with somebody who's wrapped up in themselves. Amen? Stay home. Because I'm going to tell you know what? A man wrapped up in himself is not a gift. Neither is a lady wrapped up in herself. She is not a gift. You know why? Because they're not caring. They're not caring about others. They're looking for themselves. And I have to have a confession. I had to confess to the 9 o'clock service. It grieves me because I wonder how many times when I've been wrapped up in myself that I just totally miss the needs of others. I just totally miss the needs. And I've done that. And I'd have to confess that. And I have to learn to shift the focus off of me and put it on others. Philippians 2:4 says, don't be so obsessed with getting your own advantage. Forget yourselves long enough to lend a helping hand. Guys, you and I, we'd be happier if we did this. We'd be happier. It's not easy to do because our culture and our nature teaches us to be self-centered. Did y'all know that? This is why I like donuts. They're not self-centered. Y'all know that was a good one. That was a good one, and you're going to remember it. That was a good one. I got to shift my focus to be happy. Second thing we got to learn is to learn to become someone that people trust. Some of you guys wrote that down, donut self-centered. I know what you did. We got to learn to be someone that people can trust. Proverbs 13:15 says that those who can't be trusted are on the road to ruin. They can't be trusted. Guys, the more people that trust you, the happier you're going to be. People don't trust you, you're not going to be happy. Look at verse 22. Timothy has proved himself. Paul says, Timothy has proved himself because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. Paul says, I've watched this guy a long time. He's the real deal. He's authentic. He's genuine. He's reliable. You can count on him. He'll be there when he says he'll be there. If he ain't, he'll call you. He'll be there. Do you know that people know what really kind of person that you are? Are you trustworthy? Are you trustworthy? If you're not, you're not really happy. But Paul says Timothy has proved himself. He's credible. You know, you guys know when you go to a bank and you apply for a loan, you get checked out. You get checked out to see if you're credible, to see if you'll pay back that loan. Not just banks. Every day, you and I, we get checked out by our neighbors, by our friends, by people that don't know us. They check us out to see if we're credible, to see if we're genuine, to see if we're the real deal. We really, really do. Are you who and what you say you are? Are you the real deal, or do you wear a mask? You know what kind of person Timothy proved to be. Paul said he checked out. Well, how do you develop a reputation for reliability? And that's what it is. I'm a person you can trust. How do you do this? Two things. I want you to write them down here. The very first thing you got to do is live with integrity. You got to live with integrity. Make sure that your actions match your words. I don't talk, you know, a good game and then live another different way. What you see is what you get. You see, integrity doesn't mean you're perfect. It means you're authentic. It means you're real. Proverbs 25:13, where am I at? Reliable friends who do what they say are like cool drinks in sweltering heat, refreshing. When you're reliable, you're refreshing. My question is, can people count on you? Or do you flip-flop? I want to read to you what six verses down, Proverbs 25:19 says, It says that putting confidence in an unreliable person is like chewing with a toothache. Read that. Read that. Chewing with a toothache. I'm going to tell you something, guys. Dependability is more important than ability. It's being there when you say you are. Are you dependable? Are you dependable? Second is keep my promises. Psalm 15:4 says, they always do what they promise, no matter how much it may cost. Guys, keep a promise even if you find out that it cost you more than you originally quoted. Keep a promise. You say I'd do it for that price, and that's what I'm... even if I have to take a bath on it, that's what I done. It was my word. We got to keep our word. The third thing is, I mean, that's how you do it. Third thing is this, learn how to work well with others. They don't teach this anymore, I don't think, in school. I didn't do very good with it in first grade. Mama took matters into her whole own hands, though, and I come out pretty good. So, parents, we got to teach this at home. You know, teach all four of these things. But when we work well with others, we get more done. We get more done. It's the skill of being a team member. In real life, a team member. And if you don't know how to work well with other people, you're going to be unhappy a whole lot of your life. Well, what do I need to learn? Two things, real quick. Number one, you got to learn to cooperate. It just means how to share your toys. How to share your toys, how to put them up together. You know how to cooperate with people that have a very different personality than you do. Verse 25 says this, I will send back to you Epaphroditus. We're going to talk about him. He's fast becoming one of my favorite people. My brother, my fellow worker, and my fellow soldier is also your messenger whom you sent to take care of my needs. My brother, my fellow worker, my soldier. He says he worked and fought by my side. Paul is saying that this guy knows, Epaphroditus, he knows how to be a team member. He knows how to work in a group. If you don't learn to work with people different from you, you are in deep, deep guacamole. You got to learn to work with people because most of the world is different from you. You are unique. I love he says, brother, fellow worker, soldier. Paul is saying life is a family. Life is fellowship. He's saying life is a fight. I'm going to tell you something. Church is a family. That's why years ago it used to be called brothers and sisters. I almost want to go back to that. Brothers and sisters. I'm going to tell you, I wrote it in my blog last night. I couldn't wait to get here to y'all. You are my family. I'm closer to you guys than my brothers and sisters. I mean, I know you better now. And we're a big family. It says fellowship. Guys, that's what we're doing. We're on the same goal to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world. We're on that same way. You know, then it says a battle. Life is a battle. There's forces against us. His name is Satan. We need each other. That's why I talk about getting in a small group. We need each other. It's a battle. Matthew 5:9 says this. Jesus said, you're blessed when you can show people how to cooperate instead of compete or fight. If you learn to cooperate, happiness shows up. Let me get a drink of water. Might as well kill it. Won't be no temptation now, will there? Second. Now I got a burp. All right, learn. Y'all don't pay me anyway, so it's not like I got to be a professional. Learn to be considerate. Learn to be considerate. Maybe I should have listened to that. See, Angie's not here today. I can just act a fool. the more considerate you are of other people, the happier you'll be. You ever been seen anyone inconsiderate to a waitress? They're not happy, are they? They're really not. They're not happy. But when you see someone that's considerate, you see happiness. You see happiness. And all Epaphroditus was doing was he was concerned about his people, you know, back in Philippi, because he had traveled 800 miles and they had heard he'd gotten sick. And they were concerned about him, and he was 800 miles away worried about his people. He's saying, guys, I need to get back, Paul. I need to get back because they're worried about me, and I'm worried about them worrying about me. But consideration is the key to happiness. Men, the more considerate you are as a husband, the happier your marriage is going to be. Ladies, the more considerate you are as a wife, the more happier your marriage is going to be. Guys, the more considerate your friendships are to one another, the better friendship that you're going to have. To be considerate of each other. Paul said this in 1 Corinthians 1:10. You must get along with each other. You must learn to be considerate of one another, cultivating a life in common. We all ought to memorize that one. We ought to learn it because, consideration doesn't come to us by nature. I love the word he uses in here, cultivated. It takes work. It takes work. And the problem in most marriages is that they've stopped working on the marriage. And the marriage doesn't work. It doesn't come naturally. For me to think about the words that I use sometimes and how the actions are going to affect some people, and I do it too, but I catch myself doing it sometimes. I did it twice yesterday. Some people just say what they think. You know what that is? It's rude. Any idiot can say what they think. Any idiot can swear. It takes intelligence and character to be considerate. Did I say that right? We ought to watch our mouths, me too, and stop and think how it might affect someone else before we open it. 1 Corinthians 10:33 says, I don't just do what I like or what is best for me, but what is best for everyone so that they may be saved. Paul put conversion ahead of comfort. He says it's more important that people become saved. Last one, number four, then we're getting out of here. We got to learn to live for something worth dying for. Paul says we got to learn to live for something worth dying for. Until you have that, you won't have ultimate happiness in your life. What I mean by that is most folks are giving first-class allegiance to second-class causes. And those causes are betraying them. Guy told me one time, he said, I climbed the ladder of success only to get to the top and find out I had it leaned against the wrong wall. We give big time attention and time and energy to small-time causes that ain't going to last. So here's my question for you. The thing that you're giving your time and your energy and money to right now, ask yourself, how much is this going to last? Is it going to be 5 years, 10 years? 1,000 years from today? I want to tell you something, guys. As your pastor, somebody loves you, the best use of your life is to invest it in that which will last longer than you, which will outlast you. You need to live for something worth dying for. And you're not really ready to live until you know what's worth dying for. And if you haven't figured that out, you're not living. You're just existing. You're just coasting. Verse 27 and 30 says this. Paul's telling the folks at Philippi about Epaphroditus. He said, indeed, he was very ill, and he almost died. He risked his life for the work of Christ. And he was at the point of death while trying to do for me the things you couldn't do because you were far away. The Philippians had sent a care package to Paul. Paul was in prison, and they had got some stuff together and some money and stuff like that. And they said, we're going to send it to him. Well, he's in Greece. He's 800 miles away. 800 miles away. That may not be no big deal to us because we got planes. We got trains, we got cars, trucks, whatever, you know. They didn't have nothing like that. So they said, who's willing to walk 800 miles? Epaphroditus said, I'll do it. I'll walk the 800 miles. And see, when he did it, he nearly died. He was sick. But you know what was amazing about Epaphroditus? He finished what he started. So I want to ask you, what commitment have you made that you haven't finished? What commitment? Is it maybe to your spouse, to your kids? You know, to a friend? Or a commitment to God? What commitment have you made that you haven't finished? Next question I want to ask you, is your commitment to Jesus Christ deep enough to cause you to risk your life? Would you walk 800 miles? Is it deep enough? Not many people left like Timothy and Epaphroditus. If your church, North Point, asks you to walk 800 miles to deliver a gift, would you do it? Not many folks like this guy. Not many of them there. You know, most people would say, you know, I'll live for Christ as long as it's convenient. You know, I'll do it after the game goes off tonight. I'll live for Christ as long as it'd be comfortable. As long as I'm comfortable. Are you willing to live for Christ at work when it's inconvenient? Or when it's uncomfortable? You see what I'm saying about Epaphroditus, how he gave his life? And Paul says, you ought to honor men and women like this. You ought to honor them like that. We got lots of folks in here. We had lots of folks in the 9 o'clock service that have gone on mission trips. Now, we don't walk 800 miles anymore. But we go to places cramped up on planes. And we go to places that are extremely hot, like Belize. And we go to Africa. We go to Afghanistan and Iraq. And we've been to a lot of different places. Lots of folks in here. That's not so clean. That's different. The food doesn't taste like ours. You ought to honor these people. You know, there's people here that go over here and hand out food when they've worked all night or worked all day. They do it anyway. There's folks that come up here from Sunday in and Sunday out that work in the nursery, that run the sound machine, play the music. Folks come up here on Thursday nights when they're dog tired and they clean in here. We want to honor those folks. We want to honor those Epaphroditus. We may not walk 800 miles, but they do things whenever it's inconvenient, when it's uncomfortable. It's what living for Christ is like. But I want to tell you, I need to throw that down. God is not through with you yet. God's given us big dreams here at North Point. And I believe we have them. We're still wanting to start churches. We're still, you know, one of our dreams is to be in every country on the planet. have some sort of presence that we've been there on the planet Earth. I want to tell you, this may be your first time here today. God didn't bring you here to North Point by accident. But most of all, I don't think God brought you to North Point to watch it happen. You see, we don't want to sit back and watch history being made. We want to make history. So you're not here just to sit there. You're here to help share the good news. All I'm asking you to do is this. This is your only homework this week. My mother-in-law, when she was alive, had a prayer that she prayed. Two words. God, well, that don't count. The two words are, use me. Use me. I'd love for you to pray that prayer this week, every day. Use me. I guarantee you He will. He will. He will give you something. Now, this could be a dangerous prayer. It may cause us to want to go out on a limb. But that's where we find the fruit. That's where we find the fruit. Dependability is way more worthy than ability. Are you willing to serve? Happiness comes from putting service before security. God blesses those who serve Him even when it's inconvenient or when it's uncomfortable. You see, those things stretch our faith. Read one last verse. Only those who give away their lives for my sake and for the sake of the good news will ever know what it means to really live. The happiest people on earth are caring, consistent, cooperative, considerate, and courageous. Would you pray with me? My Lord, I thank You for introducing me this week to a man named Epaphroditus, who walked, I guess you could say, actually 1,600 miles for the sake of the gospel of Christ, who nearly died for You. Lord, use me. And I ask You to hear the prayers of hundreds of others this week as they say, use me. And Lord, help me remember as they come and as they tell us that it may not sound logical what You need them to do. And it may not be my way of thinking. So I ask You, Lord, as their pastor, help me to discern whether it was You or something they ate. But Lord, use us. We want to spread the news in any way You want us to do. Regardless of what the world teaches us and tells us, we want to do what You want us to do. We love You. It's in Your name we pray. Amen.